This podcast is supported by Emerson. From technology that delivers cures at warp speed to software that makes clean energy reliable, Emerson Innovation helps make the world healthier, safer, smarter, and more sustainable. Emerson, go boldly.
Here's your money briefing for Friday, September 16th. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for J.R. Whalen. For years, colleges have promised to increase the number of lower-income students enrolled at high-performing schools. More than 125 of them took a pledge to boost their numbers by 2025. But a new check-in shows they're coming up short.
This sort of initiative, increasing enrollment by lower-income students, is expensive for schools. And a lot of them have great intentions, but ultimately don't have the money to put behind a really robust financial aid package.
The Wall Street Journal's Melissa Korn has been looking into the numbers, and on today's show, she'll talk about what universities are doing to attract and retain low-income students and what is and isn't working. That's coming up after the break.
This podcast is supported by Emerson. From technology that delivers cures at warp speed to software that makes clean energy reliable, Emerson Innovation helps make the world healthier, safer, smarter, and more sustainable. Emerson, go boldly.
Back in 2016, U.S. colleges and universities signed on to the American Talent Initiative. It's a campaign with backers including Bloomberg and the Aspen Institute that aims to increase the number of lower-income students who enroll in high-performing schools. The goal is 50,000 more students within a decade. More than 125 schools signed the pledge, but a recent progress report shows the schools are running behind. They've added fewer than 8,000 lower-income students since the initiative began. Melissa Korn covers higher education for The Wall Street Journal. She's here now to explore why colleges are not hitting the targets they set. Hi, Melissa.
Hi there.
One of the key metrics in this study is Pell Grants. What is a Pell Grant and who benefits from them?
A Pell Grant is a federal grant that students do not have to pay back. They are need-based and they generally go to students from families that earn fairly low incomes. It's used as a rough, not perfect, but useful proxy for lower income status of students.
So why are Pell Grant numbers falling behind?
The Pell Grant covers just a few thousand dollars, and other college expenses generally run far higher than that at both public and private four-year universities. And as families' budgets tightened during the pandemic, a lot of lower income students put their college plans on hold, if not walking away from them entirely. The other factor here is this sort of initiative, increasing enrollment by lower income students, is expensive for schools. And a lot of them have great intentions, but ultimately don't have the money to put behind a really robust financial aid package that can bridge that gap between what the Pell Grant covers and full cost.
This figure of fewer than 8,000 lower-income students on a pledge of 50,000, that is a quite striking figure. Where do you see in particular the numbers not bearing out the intentions of the pledge?
So one of the really interesting things from the progress report was just how varied the success stories and less successful stories may be. There are large public universities that are doing really well that have added thousands of low-income and lower-income students over the past few years. University of Illinois, University of Wisconsin, to name a few. And then you've got some large public universities that have actually seen Pell enrollment decline significantly, including UCLA. And some of the other UC, University of California campuses have seen increases. So even within a single university system, you've got disparities.
Among the schools that are trying to recruit lower income students, you reported on one, Colby College in Maine, that doubled its enrollment of Pell students between 2015 and 2021. What tactics did they use? And more broadly, what tactics have you seen as successful?
Yeah, so one of the caveats with Colby's success story is that they are a small school, so they were doubling off of fairly low numbers. One of the biggest things they did was increase financial aid. They've doubled their financial aid budget over the past 5 or 6 years. They also tried to simplify their financial aid. As their president told me, just talking about financial aid and navigating all that can be one of the biggest barriers for students. So what they did was say as a blanket statement that if your family earns $75,000 or less, you're covered. Tuition, room, and board are covered. If your family earns under $150,000, there's a cap of how much you would be expected to pay each year. Also, having college presidents use their bully pulpit, really talking about this nonstop, both externally and internally, making sure that the Board of Trustees is on board with this and they understand the value of it and that they're not going to get lower quality students just because they're lower income students. And then programs like cohort-based programs where you bring in a whole group of students together and you create a community for them, those have proven really successful. So a lot more schools are trying those sorts of things.
Clearly, this interim report shows there's still a lot to be done. What does the American Talent Initiative have to say about the path forward to meet its goals?
So the leaders of the American Talent Initiative are still optimistic. Whether or not they'll reach that 50,000, we don't know. But they have had a bunch of schools renew their vows to commit to pursuing their goals, and all the schools set out their own specific goals. And they've been putting more money behind grants to help schools implement programs that seem to be working elsewhere. There's also this peer pressure element, right? If some schools are doing a really good job of this, they get praised for it. Their competitors want to be praised as well.
So ultimately, where does this leave people with more limited means who still want to go to college? What options do they have?
Schools acknowledge that they need to do more to increase affordability and reallocate financial aid dollars to those who need the money the most. One of the other main avenues toward potential improvement here that a lot of university leaders and academics who study college access say is that the Pell Grant itself needs to be increased. The maximum award for this year is a little under $7,000. So if you're going to a school with a sticker price well over $50,000, you're still looking at a lot of loans or just that school is no longer an option. So there's been a push to double the Pell Grant for a while. It hasn't been increased significantly in many years.
That's the Wall Street Journal's higher education reporter, Melissa Korn. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm Daniela Cheslow for the Wall Street Journal, filling in for J.R. Whalen.
Welcome to Free Expression, a new podcast from The Wall Street Journal with me, Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of The Wall Street Journal. It's a podcast in which we're going to be trying to do something a little different, dig a little deeper into the issues behind the headlines that are in the news all the time. So please join me for my new podcast, Free Expression, with Jerry Baker at The Wall Street Journal. We're very much looking forward to really having some fascinating conversations, and I very much hope you'll join us.